Living alone is no fun. For one thing, you have to do all the chores by yourself. But new evidence suggests it may also increase the risk of becoming depressed. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, back with details on loneliness and mental health next.
Is your email box overrun with spam? With a StartMail account, you'll never have to give your real email address to a stranger again. Online shopping, newsletter subscriptions, getting that 30% off coupon, they all need your email address. But with StartMail, you can invent new addresses or aliases linked to your inbox behind the scenes and give those out to people while keeping your real address hidden. It's just one more protection from StartMail.com.
We all know the elderly are more prone to depression if they live alone, but new research suggests the same pattern may also affect younger, working-age adults. In a study of 3,500 people aged 30 to 65, researchers found a quarter of those living alone took antidepressants. That's almost twice the rate of those with spouses, family, or roommates. Did living alone cause depression, or do depression-prone people simply prefer solitude? Both explanations are plausible, but there's one important wake-up call for all of us: to reach out to friends, family, and neighbors who live alone. Some human contact could make all the difference in the world. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, reminding you to try StartMail.
This is the Dr. Catherine Albrecht Show.
Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Wave your hand to encourage them. Wave your hand to encourage them as they march into the palaces of the high and mighty. I, the Lord, have dedicated these soldiers for this task. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger, and they will rejoice when I am exalted.
Hello, good afternoon. Catherine Albrecht here with you, broadcasting live from my studio. Exciting. We'll see. Hopefully by the end of this week, we will be streaming the content from the show onto YouTube. So I'm excited about that. This hour, we have scheduled Frank Gaffney. He is returning to the program. He's the president of the Institute for the American Future. And we are going to be talking about politics and on the world stage, something we don't talk about, that I don't talk about quite as much as I would like to. Mr. Gaffney will be joining us in just a moment. I've heard that he's had some technical challenges getting the connection to the studio to work properly. I think it's on our end, but he'll be joining us in just a couple of moments. So looking forward to being joined by Frank Gaffney. In the meantime, a couple of things I wanted to talk about just on the international stage and on the national stage. I became aware yesterday, maybe everybody else knew this was out there, but that the Trump administration has come out with an AI position paper, and there is a website. Let me see if I can, I thought I had it right here. AI.gov, I believe it is. All right. And on there, we have not only President Trump and his executive orders in support of artificial intelligence in the country, we also have a video with Melania Trump, actually, talking about how she is looking forward to all of the kids in America getting on board AI through an educational program. If you go to AI.gov, you will see, hang on, let me get to the top of the page here. See, actually a pretty good picture of President Trump there. All right, let me read you this AI action plan. It has me actually quite concerned. The U.S. is in a race to achieve global dominance in artificial intelligence. Whoever has the largest AI ecosystem will set the global standard and reap broad economic and security benefits. All right. As listeners, longtime listeners are aware, I'm actually writing a book about technology and how I believe that the culmination of our technology is artificial intelligence. I've been reading from a book from the 1960s by Jacques, let me see if I can pronounce this the French way, Ellul, E-L-L-U-L, Jacques, I call him Jacques Ellul, The Technical Society. It was a bestseller. And for anyone who is interested in the issue of technology and society and concerns about technology and society, he's your guy. I spent a couple hours last night actually reading the Unabomber Manifesto. I did not realize, but Ted Kaczynski, who was the Unabomber arrested in the 1990s, who committed suicide in 2023 with advanced stage rectal cancer, that he had continued, in addition to the manifesto about technological society and its, I don't know, its downsides or discontents. In addition to that, he actually wrote two more books from within prison that were published in, I think one of them was a lengthy essay and one was a book in 2016 and 2017. He was in regular contact with academics and with journalists and people outside of, obviously he was in prison, but he remained in contact. And I have heard or read that his insights into the downsides of technology were really insightful. So I went, okay, well, you know, he was a killer and he killed three people and maimed, I think, 23 people with package bombs that he sent through the mail and hand-delivered to people. I learned last night that Ted Kaczynski had done those things from an altruistic motive, and I'm going to put that in quotes, because he wanted to have the world read his manifesto, read his publication, read his book, and he could not get anyone interested in it. So he said, I know what I'll do. I will do these violent actions. I'll bring attention to myself, and I will essentially, hold the country hostage, or I will, extortion, that unless they publish my manifesto, I will continue to kill and maim and be, a terrorist. And so, of course, it was published. It's now been broadly published. And a lot of people have said, well, you know, his personal behavior was abhorrent, but he was a brilliant guy, a Harvard graduate. He got a PhD in mathematics from the University of Michigan. He taught at Berkeley. Smart guy. I mean, there's no question. He started Harvard at 16. He actually got a full scholarship to Harvard at 16. However, I have word that Mr. Gaffney is with us, so let me see. Let me bring him up in just a sec. I just want to... what we learned is that, Ted Kaczynski, supposedly the genius, I read most of the manifesto. I kind of skimmed it. I was not impressed, frankly. And a lot of the ideas that he had in the manifesto had come from Jacques Ellul. So I went back to the original source and, oh my gosh, it's wonderful. Very good writing, very insightful, very scary, and very much predicting what we're experiencing today with regard to AI. All right, well, with no further ado, I would like to welcome our guest, Frank Gaffney, to the program. He's the president of the Institute for the American Future and Center for Security Policy. And Frank Gaffney, hello, are you with us?
I am, yes, ma'am.
Perfect. All right. Glad you're here. Sorry about the mix-up getting you on. So just before you joined us, I was talking about President Trump's new AI push, the AI.gov website, and all of the, all the effort and money and presidential, executive orders and speeches and commentary in support of artificial intelligence. And you are our go-to person for really to understand what's happening on the international stage. And I just wanted to ask if you, what do you see happening with regard to AI? Are we really at the leading edge of it? And is that not the leading edge of a massive plunge into disaster? So...
Well, those are the questions of our time, aren't they? I'm not sure to answer them, to be honest. I spent an hour on our television program the other day interviewing Joe Allen, who is the author of Dark Aeon and works for Steve Bannon as kind of his AI guru, transhumanism guy as well. So I know a little bit more about all of this thanks to picking his brains for an hour, but I will tell you, I come down as kind of, I guess, a Luddite, that is to say, someone who's recognizes that the march of technology is such that AI is going to be inflicted upon us, and there will be, you know, certain benefits and upsides to that being done, but I think on balance, I'm in the camp of people who think this is a fairly fearsome proposition, and in particular, what I have come to call Franken AI, as the almost predictable upshot of it all, which is that you will find, if not this year, if not maybe next year, in short order, I think probably, if not maybe a little longer, but that this evolves in a way that is beyond human understanding and control, at which point we may well become, you know, enslaved by, or at least expendable to, you know, machines of our creation, but that are no longer under our, you know, direction. So that's my principal fear, and it ties in with some other concerns, some of which are unfortunately now being, I think, pretty much embraced by the Trump administration, I'm sorry to say, including the combination of artificial intelligence and big data and quantum computing, you know, instruments like, you know, algorithms that make TikTok work, for example, and
they're bringing it all together. It is getting scary. And you, all right, well, I can't wait to hear your further thoughts on this. All right, this is the Dr. Catherine Albrecht Show. My guest is Frank Gaffney. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust. Your email is your business, but if it's spied on, hacked, or intercepted, it can fall into the wrong hands. The solution is encryption, a high-tech way to scramble your data so no one can read it. For years, only the technical elite could use this powerful tool, until StartMail came along. StartMail not only lets you encrypt the email you send, it encrypts your entire account. Encryption. It's just one more way StartMail.com keeps you safe.
Hi.
Flowing like a gentle river, righteousness rolling over you like waves in the sea. Gentle river, the righteousness rolling over you like waves in the sea.
Hey, we're back. Catherine Albrecht here. My guest is Frank Gaffney. He is the president of the Institute for the American Future. He acted as President Reagan's Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy and served as the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Nuclear Forces and Arms Control Policy. Frank, you are, I mean, with your background, having been involved in really big weapons development and really large-scale global concerns, to hear you say that artificial intelligence is a threat, I mean, I think people should sit up and take notice, because you've dealt with, you know, nuclear powers and really large-scale threats. Where do you think AI comes into all of that?
Well, I think it's a large-scale threat. And you know, again, I don't consider myself by any means an expert on the subject, but I'm concerned when I hear, you know, people, I think even Elon Musk, talking about concerns that they have about this evolution. And it's not necessarily the AI of the day, but it's this, you know, artificial general intelligence, as they're calling it, or artificial, I think, special intelligence, which...
When it's smarter than us, yeah, the version that... Elon Musk actually referred to it as... Yeah, Elon Musk called it summoning the demon and warned against it, and yet he has created a huge AI company himself. In fact, he was one of the founders of OpenAI, which made ChatGPT. So it's puzzling to me how...
To pursue it, correct?
Yeah, the very people who... created it are the ones telling us that it poses an existential threat to humanity, that this actually may extinct us, the very people building it. In fact, Sam Altman said, maybe it was tongue-in-cheek, but he said it'll probably kill us all, but in the meantime, we'll have some great companies. So I think there's a fatalism. I think there's almost an expectation on the part of the people building this that it's just going to kill us, and we may as well get rich in the meantime and enjoy what time we have left. Is that your sense when you are talking to people who are, you know, developing policy and thinking these things through? Are you getting kind of that same fatalistic sense, or do they really believe the hype and the optimism that this is going to create a great future for everyone and make America great, and it's going to be all good?
I guess it's a self-selecting sample, to be honest. But the people that I'm talking to are either concerned as I am, and I think as you are, as well as, you know, at least on some days, Elon Musk is, and others of the tech bros, as they call themselves. But, you know, there are people who are, I think, whistling past the graveyard, frankly, who are taking the position that it's going to be great for the foreseeable future, and we just can't predict what's going to happen past that point, and we'll kind of take our chances with it. That doesn't inspire great confidence in my mind, frankly, but that's what I think some are saying, who acknowledge that there's a danger, a potential danger at least. They just are persuading themselves that it probably won't be their problem. Might be their children's problem, their children's children's problem for sure, but not theirs. And I was just saying before the break, if I can, the pieces of this technology, you know, sort of complex, that worries me especially is the widespread adoption now, mandated by law, in case of, you know, travel, for example, on airlines, is the real ID, because this is a digital platform that is very much compatible with a kind of surveillance state control, totalitarian control, really, that we associate with the Chinese social credit system. And when you put together, you know, AI and, as I was saying earlier, you know, big data and quantum computing and surveillance, you know, state on an immense scale, and these IDs, for every man, woman, and child on the planet, the likelihood, if not on this administration's watch, I think that's unlikely, but a future one, that we will find ourselves, much as the Chinese people have, with our every move being monitored, our every utterance, our every social media post, our every transaction, and so on, controlled, not just monitored, but controlled, to the point where, you know, the central bank digital currency, which is, again, another natural evolution of this thing, controls what you can spend your money on, or even if you have any money, because you will lose it if you're not considered to be in China, a good communist, or here, you know, a good whatever, whoever's going to be making use of this. Big Brother, I guess, perhaps is the way to describe it. So all of those are things that I believe are now more likely than not to emerge. Don't know when. Don't know whether, you know, we'll have a fighting chance against them, but it seems as though that's kind of baked into the DNA of what these AI masters of the universe are up to.
Yeah, and you know, what's particularly concerning, I helped to create a private email program called StartMail, which is an alternative to Google and Yahoo and Apple Mail. And we have been, since 2013, telling people, well, marketers can read your email. And the response has been, for some people, absolutely, I don't want that. But for other people, you know, who has time to look at me? You know, the government can read your, you know, who has time to really look? I'm not famous. I'm not a CEO. What AI does to change that dynamic is it can look at everybody all the time. And, you know, no human agency, no matter how well-funded or how big, is going to be able to look at every single citizen all the time. But AI has pretty much unlimited attention span and unlimited storage, and it can do that in a flash. So let's say one day, you know, we get another administration and it wants to go against people who have ever in the past done fill in the blank, then AI would be able to just go through, do, and identify those people instantaneously. All right, I want to talk about what's going on in China. Now, you host Securing America with Frank Gaffney. You have a show on Real America's Voice Network, and I know you talk a lot about China. You have a book, The Indictment Prosecuting the Chinese Communist Party and Friends for Crimes Against America, China, and the World, and your website, presentdangerchina.org. You mentioned what's going on in China with those IDs. Can you explain that to listeners so they can see what is happening there and what we want to fight against here?
Sure. The Chinese Communist Party has, from its inception, been all about absolute domination of the population of China. It's prompted them not only to, you know, use vast quantities of snitches and, you know, secret police and, you know, neighborhood watch kind of operations, but as the march of technology has replaced that kind of brute force approach, it's been complemented, I think it's better to say, with, you know, signals intelligence and the aggregation of information, specifically of the kind that I was just mentioning. You know, what are you thinking? What are you saying? What are you writing? You know, what are you buying? What are you eating? You know, the whole.
Well, and then we get Neuralink, and then it's going to be, what are you thinking, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Chips in our brains.
It's kind of their focus of effort, exactly. But my point is, Catherine, that when you are looking at people who have that kind of determination and patience and, you know, leave no stone unturned, I guess you might say, approach to monitoring, surveilling, and controlling a population. Where it inexorably leads is they will be able to reward and punish you for what they consider to be behavior that is either good or bad, respectively. And that's where I really worry we're headed, is that it's not that hard to see. For example, the aggregation of our health information or our social media, you know, exchanges or our consumption being the sort of thing that is, with the help of AI, both monitored and then evaluated according to the preferences of whoever is running things, and punished if it's, you know, not to their satisfaction.
So I know the Chinese have been working overtime to build, you know, to compete with the U.S. and compete with the, you know, ChatGPT and Anthropic and all the other companies that have come out. They are, you know, working very hard to create AI that it meets or even surpasses ours. Have they already begun, like, incorporating that into, I mean, I can't imagine they wouldn't, right? I mean, China, it must be their greatest dream to have this additional power to enable them to keep track all the time of their citizens, not just what they could get away with before, now make it all-encompassing. All right, stay tuned, Frank. We're coming up on a break. We'll come right back. I want to talk about the Chinese national ID. I want to talk about real ID and how AI is likely to play a role in all of that. All right, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Is your email box overrun with spam? With a StartMail account, you'll never have to give your real email address to a stranger again. Online shopping, newsletter subscriptions, getting that 30% off coupon, they all need your email address. But with StartMail, you can invent new addresses or aliases linked to your inbox behind the scenes and give those out to people while keeping your real address hidden. It's just one more protection from StartMail.com.
Red alert, Yahoo users. You've fallen in a trap that could ruin your life if you keep using Yahoo.
You consent to sharing all data in your email account with our AI providers, and you grant us a perpetual license to use, display, publish, and publicly distribute your content in any media known now or in the future, and to let other users access and distribute it as well.
Yikes! It's time to switch to StartMail, the only email that's AI-free and private by design. StartMail.com. Use promo code JD.
I am the Lord who opened the way through the waters, making a dry path through the sea. I am the Lord who opened the way through the waters, making a dry path through the sea.
I'm back. All right, Catherine Alberteur, we're visiting this hour with Frank Gaffney, talking about China. Where, you know, we don't hear, Frank, an awful lot about what's going on in China. I think to the extent that the average American hears about China, we know that, you know, they're competing against us economically, and maybe a little couple of rumblings about their military. But I think this notion that China is not just potentially an enemy to the U.S., but an enemy to its own citizens is something most people probably haven't given a lot of thought to. So what is it like to be a citizen of China? How are they using this security apparatus and this ID and the AI and all the technology against their own citizens?
Well, that's such a good question, and you're absolutely right. We don't have the kind of visibility into what's going on in China that we really need. Even with respect to the stuff that it directly bears on, you know, us, like what the Chinese Communist Party says every single day to their people in Mandarin, in their various propaganda outlets, which is that we are their enemy, and they are set on destroying us. That's something we have a need to know, don't you think? here in the United
so
States.
So wait, so but let me make sure, I'm not to interrupt, but I want to make sure I understand that. So are you saying that the Chinese people, I mean, I know certainly North Korea, right? We know that Kim Jong-un has got a security apparatus that says, you know, you may be starving, but you're so much better off than those awful, horrible, devil Americans who, you know, mistreat their kids even worse. We know that that's happening in North Korea, but are you saying that there is intentional propaganda messaging in China that paints Americans in America as their actual enemy?
100%. Every day. And that's this is not just, you know, propaganda. This is mind control, indoctrination.
What are they accusing us of? Because I can't even imagine what possibly. Well, I mean, I know if you're, you know, some places where the great white devils, or we don't, you know, follow Islam the right way, or, you know, there's various explanations for other countries of why to oppose America. What reason does China have?
I think there are myriad reasons, and I'm not saying that any of them have a basis in fact, but that doesn't matter. This is about what the party wants people to believe and how they want them to react to what they're told about us. A lot of it, I think, goes back in a way to, you know, the bad old days of the British Empire and the Opium Wars and the kinds of things that were done to the people of China, the government of China, by the Western devils and all of that. We have come in for, I think, the lion's share of the criticism for the past, you know, 30 or 40 years. I mean, they've always, since they came to power, they were hostile to us, of course. But I'm just saying that I think in particular, we have been made the main enemy of the Chinese Communist Party, principally, I think, because we stand in the way of the realization of their long-standing ambition, which is to be the dominant power in the world. They've got to get rid of us in order for that impediment to be removed. So I think the people of China have been fed a steady diet of this kind of stuff, and as a result, you know, I don't know if they all believe it, but I think a fair number of them do, which makes all the more urgent, to my mind, every effort we can make to reach over the heads of the Chinese communists and speak directly to the people of China on the point that we have a mutual enemy. It hasn't, fortunately, to this point, killed 100 million Americans, but it has killed 100 million Chinese. And by the way, Catherine, that doesn't even take the 400 million that they claim, you know, boast about having killed in the womb. It's part of their, you know, efforts to control this population growth. So that's, you know, a population that has a lot of grievances against the CCP, and I think it behooves us to make common cause to see if we can't bring down their enemy before that enemy, you know, takes us out, which is, I think, its purpose.
So talk to me about the Chinese national ID and the, I think you called it the credit system. How does that work?
Well, a digital ID becomes a platform on which all kinds of information can be stored. What the World Health Organization has been doing, and by the way, it's run by a communist by the name of Tedros Ghebreyesus, who was selected for the job by the Chinese Communist Party.
Where's he from?
He's from Ethiopia. He's a communist radical there, plucked from obscurity to run this major international organization because he would faithfully do what he was told, and he demonstrated that in the COVID experience. But to your question about how is this ID translated into a vehicle of control, with the kind of information that we've been talking about placed on it, maybe it's your health information, maybe it's your place of employment, maybe it's where your kids go to school, maybe it's how much you earn, maybe it's where you bank, maybe it's you know, your social media, your whatever, you know, your innermost thoughts are, as they can be discerned by, you know, your speech or who you interact with and that sort of thing. Those all are translated into a score. And the matrix of the Chinese Communist Party. If you are a good communist, as they perceive it, which means you toe the party line, you don't, indicate that you are in any way hostile to the regime and its agenda, you'll be rewarded. And maybe the nature of the reward isn't much more than you're just more or less left alone. But God forbid that you are perceived by the party to be not a good communist. That can result in all kinds of punishments and restrictions and control. And that's what the social credit system is about, rewarding the good communists, punishing the bad communists as they are perceived, using these various technologies and algorithms and artificial intelligence and so on.
So, you know, I'm thinking about this would be, as we think back on 20th century history, and government has been the most deadly force on Earth, more deadly than all the Earth's wars combined, have been people killing their own citizens. And R.J. Rummel wrote about this in a book called Death by Government and coined the term democide. He was a political science researcher at the University of Hawaii, and it's quite an extraordinary book. And the Chinese government is one of the worst offenders. Few people realize this, but the Chinese government, during the Cultural Revolution and the transfer over to communism, killed more people by far than Adolf Hitler ever killed with the Nazis in the Nazi regime. And yet we hear a lot about that, but we don't hear about, you know, what China did. And I'm thinking back to the, you know, the days of Mao Zedong or the days of Lenin and Stalin and the days of Pol Pot in Cambodia and all of the evil dictators throughout the 20th century who murdered literally millions of people. What would they have done had they had access to this kind of technology and AI? I mean, they could literally just type in there. I know in Cambodia, Pol Pot killed everyone with a college degree, and then he killed everyone, you know, with a high school diploma. Then he killed everyone who could read and everyone with glasses. So, you know, because he didn't want anyone intelligent enough to get rid of him. It would be so, I don't know, so terrifying to have a dictator be able to identify who lives, who dies, who gets promoted, who gets demoted, who can have a bank account, who can't. Are we already seeing that in China, where people are being denied their basic rights because of this?
I believe that's the case, yes. I don't know that it's being weaponized on a vast scale, but the potential
yet.
Is there
yet,
for it.
Right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's exactly right. It's baked into the DNA of the Chinese Communist Party to want to do that, and it's a matter of time, I think, before they will do it. And the beauty, from their point of view, of this kind of arrangement is you don't need to incarcerate people in gulags. You don't need to go through the expense. You don't need to have the, you know, that bad reputation that is associated with, you know, genocide of the Uyghurs, for example. You just essentially rub them out. If they can't get access to food, they can't buy food, they've got no jobs, they can't travel anyplace else to get away from it all. I mean, these are the sorts of things that, you know, in a very antiseptic way, enable you to snuff people. And I think that's what they will increasingly be doing. And frankly, what they have in mind for us. You know, there's a famous speech, a secret speech that was given back in the early 2000s by the guy who at the time was the defense minister of China. His name was he's a general by the name of Qi Haoquan. And he said, the purpose of their biological weapons program is to depopulate our country so it can be colonized by China.
All right, well, that's scary. All right, Frank Gaffney is my guest. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and we'll be right back with our final segment right after this. Stay tuned.
I do believe in you, and I know you believe. I've been hearing a lot about the LifeWave patches, and they sound amazing. And I'm thinking I want to try them for myself. But can you tell me how they work?
You wear the patch, which is about the size of a quarter, 12 hours a day, 12 on, 12 off. And the patch uses your body's own light and energy and copper peptides to reactivate the dormant stem cells in your body. Once a stem cell has been reactivated, it can be used by any of the cells in your body that need it, creating a healing and growth process you haven't experienced since your youth. So in a nutshell, this is how the LifeWave X39 patch works.
You can purchase the LifeWave patches by going to americasfreedomnetwork.com. Then click on the Natural Health Products button at the top of the page. That's americasfreedomnetwork.com.
Look, this product works, and you've got nothing to lose because there's a 100% money-back guarantee.
That's americasfreedomnetwork.com.
Made you, and I will not forget you. I have swept away your sins like a cloud. I, the Lord, made you, and I will not forget you. I have swept away your sins like a cloud.
Okay, we're back. Final segment with our guest, Frank Gaffney. Frank, I'm on your website at presentdangerchina.org. Tell our listeners how they can find more information about these topics, how they can watch your program and get more information about this. You have a mailing list, I think. Anyway, let us know the whole scoop. How can we learn more?
Thank you, Catherine. There's a couple of ways. The Institute for the American Future has a very easy to remember domain name. It's usfuture.org. And you'll find nested there five different other websites, one of which is the Committee on the Present Danger China's, which is presentdangerchina.org. And I particularly commend to those of you who are interested in learning more about China that site, because one of the things that we've been doing for the past 2 years or so is a weekly webinar, usually about an hour and a half, hour and 15 minutes long, in which we drill down on the various ways in which the Chinese Communist Party is waging war against us. They're not just declaring it, they're just not just, you know, putting it out in their propaganda. They are actually doing it. And they've been doing it assiduously, using this technique. As I said, it's called unrestricted warfare, meaning everything you can think of that is sort of not so much non-kinetic, let's say non-explosive, but pre-kinetic, that is, you know, preparatory for the old-fashioned kind of war, the shooting kind. And they've been hard at it. We've been documenting what they've been doing. It's intended not to just scare people, but to equip them to make plain that we have to push back against this if we are to save our country.
So talk to me about these webinars. How can people sign up? Are they, is it a subscription service? Do they have to join your organization? How can people tune into one of them?
No, it is a subscription, but it's free, and we welcome people signing up. We sometimes have to adjust the schedule, so it's the best way to make sure you don't miss them. Or you can catch them, you know, you don't have to listen to it live, you can catch them at your convenience. But presentdangerchina.org is where you can both subscribe and watch them. And I'm a little close to it, to be completely impartial, to be honest. I moderate the things, but I find them, without exception, highly informative and really, you know, required viewing if you care about this country, because you have a need to know as to what they're up to, the Chinese Communists, and what we can do about it. It's not just admiring problems. We try on every one of these programs to talk about what kinds of actions are required on our part.
So let me ask you this. What can we do? It really does feel, there's so many Chinese people. And, what can we as U.S. citizens do to address the fact that they are painting us as enemies and preparing for war against us?
Well, on your point about so many Chinese people, there are about to be a lot less Chinese people. Because of that one-child policy, because of that mass annihilation of hundreds of millions of them, particularly the girls, the population of China is both aging and greatly decreasing. There are some who say that, within the next 30 years, their population will be smaller than that of the United States.
Really?
I mean, think about that. Down from 1.3 or 1.4, whatever it is, at the moment. Yeah. And so that creates pressures inside the country that are almost unimaginable. But I would say, in answer to your question, what do we do about it? One is, don't bring 600,000 more Chinese nationals into this country as so-called students. We've got, by some estimates, 270,000 of them here already. We've got another 100,000, some people say, of what appear to be Chinese soldiers who were let into the country during the Biden administration. So you put another 600,000 on top of that, you've got 1 million Chinese in this country, all of whom, Catherine, this is critically important, all of whom, by Chinese law, are obliged to do whatever the CCP orders them to do, whether that's espionage or proprietary information theft or, sabotage, subversion, creating, mayhem inside our country. It's just, and I know that the president has said it's going to be, 600 million. I'm prayerful that what he's going to do actually is say, not 600 million, I meant 600,000 additional ones. I hope he's going to have what I call a Cracker Barrel moment, where he realizes he's made a terrible mistake and he reverses course, on a dime. Because I think if your audience will help in making that known to the White House, it would have a good effect. The other thing I would just say is we need to be clear about what is the real systemic correction that is required now. And that is, I believe, bringing down the Chinese Communist Party, working with the people of China to do just that. They say they're our natural allies, and they've got as much interest as we do in ending this regime. And I think with their collaboration and our leadership and support, it can be done.
Now, I would like to join one of your webinars. When is the next one coming up?
Typically, we do them Friday afternoon, Eastern time, around 1 to 2:15. But as I say, sometimes we just did one yesterday, which was fascinating, by the way. It's now posted at presentdangerchina.org. It makes the contention that, there's all this talk about peace between Russia and Ukraine and, negotiations and who meets with whom and security. Our thesis is that as long as Xi Jinping wants war in Ukraine, there is going to continue to be war. That he started it, that he's been enabling it, and that he's the principal beneficiary of it. And that's why it's crazy that he's being, given a pass on all this.
So in our last couple minutes that we have here, because that just opens up a whole new thing, how is China involved in the war in Ukraine? How, just in a nutshell, what's the connection?
Okay, the following. Vladimir Putin went to Beijing for the Olympics in 2022, February. I think he was green-lighted in his invasion. I don't know, it might have been Xi's idea, for that matter, but at the very least, I think he got approval from the man who at that meeting became the dominant partner in a so-called no limits partnership. When the war didn't go exactly as planned, Xi's purchases of energy, albeit at cut rate prices, from the Russians, Xi's sale of arms to the Russians, NG's support for the chaos that this has induced, particularly, you know, the distractions that it has created for us, for our leaders, for our allies, and the fractures with those allies, has all been very conducive to Xi's agenda, which is to make it almost impossible for us to interfere with his own designs for, you know, conquest in Asia, because we're so tied down. And it's not, by the way, just Ukraine, it's the Middle East as well, and perhaps other places besides. But these are the things that I think we need to be understanding or operating at the moment, and make all the more urgent what I'm recommending as the bottom line, which is we must help liberate the people of China from this regime that has murdered them relentlessly and seeks to do the same to us.
Yeah, it seems like it just seems overwhelming when they have that amount of social control, when they have the the scores and the IDs and the surveillance. Is it possible that the, I think you said 600,000 Chinese here in America, is it possible that just by being here, they could learn that we are not their enemies and maybe they would be our allies, the Chinese who have come here and, met us in person? Could we reach out to them?
You know, we're so nice, right? Look, I'm simply saying that whether on an individual basis, some Chinese who are brought into this country might, you know, feel that way. We've been telling ourselves this is the great idea of, you know, educating them here, is that we'll have that effect.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
In practice, though, have you heard about these what they call overseas Chinese police service centers?
No.
Well, they're sometimes just called police stations. Here inside the United States, they rolled up one in New York, but they're estimated to be maybe 7 or 8 others. And what those so-called service centers do to service the Chinese communities in this country is they bring your relative in and show them in custody and make it abundantly clear that it will go badly for them if you don't do what you're told, which means they're not going to like us. They're going to do what they're told by Beijing, which is hate us, and help them bring us down if they can.
Oh, goodness. Well, Frank, you've certainly got me thinking. I will do my best to join your webinar. I'm going to try to be there Friday. I encourage my listeners to do the same. It is presentdangerchina.org. Frank Gaffney, usfuture.org also. Thank you so much for being with me this hour. You've opened my eyes to a lot of things. I appreciate it.
Always a privilege. It's not this Friday, by the way. It's next Friday. We'll get
next Friday. All right. All right. I will put it on my calendar. Awesome. All right. Thank you so much, Frank. God bless you. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. See you tomorrow. All right. God bless you all. Bye-bye.